And sticking with particle physics and the Higgs boson, possibly owing to its gravity, what could be a more fitting tribute to the 2012 Nobel Prize-winning discovery of the Higgs than a musical composition created by the collider itself? Domenico Vicinanza heads the Electronics and Sound Engineering Research Group at Anglia Ruskin University. He's used a process called data sonification to turn the measurements from the experiments that uncovered the Higgs into this music. It's beautiful. How do you do this? What's the secret?
Thank you very much. Well, what we are listening to is the result of a process called data sonification. And data sonification is all about making measurements into something audible. So, if you like, it's like using notes and melodies to represent data instead of using conventional points and lines.
Which data did you use?
So, in this case, we use energy measurements that were taken by physicists in 2012. So what we are listening to is the distribution of the energy going from really low to high energies when the Higgs was actually discovered.
I see. So when you see a collision happen, those recordings that were made in the detectors at CERN, they've given you that data and you've done something to it to turn it into a tune.
Exactly. What we did to the measurements was mapping them, was basically associating to each single measurement, each single number, a music note using an algorithm, so a set of rules that are actually linking the data to the music notes and giving a melody.
There's only a small number of notes, but the energy levels must have been a continuous variable. It must have been over a huge range. So how do you turn something with many, many, many possible energies into a discrete number of musical notes?
So what we did was actually using a mapping process that was compressing the range of the energy variation to a certain number of octaves in music terms. So we had an orchestra, so we had instruments able to play really low notes like double basses, to instruments able to play really high-pitched notes like flutes and piccolos. And so we decided beforehand what was our range, or energy range in sonic terms in some way, and we did the mapping.
You've got a real kind of orchestrated piece here, though. It's not just individual discrete notes. So how did you then add the extra layers of orchestration? Did you apply one rule for one set of instrumentation, then another set of rules for another, and then get something that sounds good?
That was indeed a possibility. So what I prefer to do was take the energy measurement and create one single long melody, really long one. And then I was listening to it, and I was extracting pieces of this long melody that was sounding particularly nice or was particularly suitable for an orchestration. And then I, as a composer, what I like to do was actually using the right pieces for the right instruments. So, and I actually started working, trying to imagine how these little pieces could layer on top of each other. And I worked on my orchestration to tell a story. And the story I wanted to tell was how the discovery happened. So working from low energy, low frequencies, double basses and cellos at the beginning, and having it building up with woodwinds and with horns, creating, so sustaining the melody, and finally the big discovery.
Could you use the same technique to do other data? Presumably you could.
Indeed. So data sonification is a really, really general technique. So we can actually use it to represent whatever we like. For example, I was recently involved in a research actually using data sonification to help doctors to discriminate between healthy and potentially dangerous cells in cancer. So we're actually using sound to discriminate between healthy and unhealthy situation.
Where previously they would look down a microscope and try to discriminate visually, you would have a computer read a slide and translate what it's seeing, in inverted commas, into sounds, and then the doctors are using their ears to discriminate rather than exclusively their eyes.
Exactly. And the reason why we are doing that is because we believe that ears can be much better than eyes in discriminating anomalies and discover patterns. So in some sense, the hearing sense is a neglected one. So we are so much relying today in looking at graphs and looking at visual representation of information that we forgot that we can actually use other senses. And hearing is one of the best ones. We have one of the probably most complex way of detecting patterns embedded in our ears, and we are not using it.
I suppose this is the audio equivalent of creating a graph. If I've got a complex series of numbers and I want to represent them in the way that makes them easier to interpret and to show what the trend is, I draw a graph. You're doing the same thing with music for big data sets.
Exactly. And what we are hoping to do is actually using the natural capability of our ears in detect trends and patterns and anomalies. So one of the examples that I really like is when we think about a graph and we think about lots of points in a graph, sometimes it's really, really difficult to identify one misplaced point in a graph. And if we think about a melody which has a lot of notes and really complex, it's quite easy actually to spot a wrong misplaced note in a melody. And that's all because we are so good in detecting anomalies and patterns using our ears.
Domenico Vicinanza from Anglia Ruskin University. There are no wrong notes in your composition. It's beautiful. And here's a little bit more to listen to. You can catch the rest on the Naked Scientist website. We'll put a link there to it.
You're listening to The Naked Scientist with me, Georgia Mills, and with Chris Smith. Still to come, how scientists are genetically tracking the Ebola virus across Africa, new guidelines on how much we should be standing up at work, and the blood transfusion that's compatible with everyone. But first,